This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Best in the world, had greatness enough from she was a young bohemian girl.
Okay then.
Long like fettuccine, but she fast like Lamborghini. You don't have to believe me, this already in history. Give us lane 7 again.
Think we can see that?
Mount split again.
Oh.
Because we win again. Gold medal again. Give us lane 7.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. It is Tuesday, the 10th of August, 2021. You are on the clock with Erin Green. And look here, she long like fettuccine, but she fast like Lamborghini. Good morning, Miss Shawnee Miller-Webo. And I needed to say that because I realized this whole time I was forgetting to call your husband's name. Dear Mr. Webo, I don't want you to be upset at me and at others for sometimes forgetting to put your name there. As far as we are concerned, your name is Mr. Miller-Webo. See, we don't mind you taking the Webo once you prepare to take the Miller. That's right. Good morning, and good morning to Mr. Stephen Gardner. We have not left you out of the mix, sir. We need one solo. We need one song for Stevie Tuman. That song is fantastic. Good morning to my guest co-host, Mr. Darwin Thompson. How are you? I am pretty good. I could be honest with you. I got the wind knock out of my sail last night.
Yeah. Same here.
Boy, look here. The wind was knock out of my sail last night. But living on the island, you quickly learn is that when the wind get knock out your sail, you got to learn how to tack.
That's
you got to remember to tack and tack till you find the wind to push you where you going. So I don't know. Good. I don't know what was up last night, but we're going to talk about it for a brief moment. It's not going to be the entirety of the show because I got a special guest on with us today that's just back from Ghana, right? In the motherland. He's just come back from a wonderful, I think short, but wonderful tour of Ghana to talk with us about some wonderful things that are in the works that are diasporic Pan-African family have been working on during the month of emancipation. Again, good morning. You are on the clock with Erin Green, where we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. Before we get into the show, let me remind you about their employment incentive program. Did you know that VAT-registered businesses who are tax-compliant are eligible to participate in the government's employment incentive program and can receive up to $400 per week in tax credit for up to 10 new full-time employees? Visit atlas.revenue.gov.bs to apply. This offer is valid until December the 31st, 2021. This message is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. Well, I told you to look out for Miss Miller-Webo because she long like fettuccine but fast like Lamborghini. Look here, the poetry. The poetry. That's why you got to be careful with these Bahamian lovers, right?
Yeah.
Because if anybody ever tell me I fast long like fettuccine and fast like Lamborghini, I can look in the mirror. I got acknowledged that they lying. They obviously lying. And I still go fall in love. Because that's lyrics.
The sweet words.
But look here, at the same time, while we're watching out for Shawnee,
yes.
I want to remind everybody that there is a tropical storm alert for our southern Bahamian islands.
Right.
And please follow your newspaper tune into social media, to any of the local meteorological and weather sites.
Right.
There are a number of pages on Facebook that you can mm-hmm. follow to keep up with the news about the weather.
Mm-hmm. There's NEMA, the DRA, all those.
And places. NOAA.
NOAA as well, yes, yes. NOAA is perfect.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the American National...
North Oceanic. I can't remember the full acronym.
Yeah, and don't worry about that. Just remember NOOA. Go find them. That's what it is, right? NOOA?
Yes. Yes.
Go find them and stay in tune with them. Also, if you don't already have a small handheld radio or a cell phone that can be converted to a radio with headphones, get one right away.
It's a necessity.
All right. I got one quick text. Mama say they got sugar on their tongue. Yes, they do. That's what your Grammy was trying to warn you about. Young men and young women, right? Young women and young men. Dear young men, don't let these young women sweet talk you and sell you a dream of love and roses and you taking care of their finances. Mm-hmm. Don't let them sell you that dream. And speaking about dreams, Darwin, did you follow the PM's address last night?
Yeah, I followed most of it. I'll let you go on with the questioning. I don't want to say anything.
Right, but I have no questions. I get plenty of questions, but not for you, right?
Right.
I sat and I watched it. I have an A to Z. 26 yeah. things that I picked up on during the discussion. And no, you can't call it a discussion because...
No.
Only the prime minister was talking.
Extremely one-sided.
Right. One of the things that stuck out was there, again, was no question and answer, mm-hmm. period.
Mm-hmm. So this is like those relationships where it's all just one person putting in all the work. But I don't feel like that person is him.
Well, I got the impression that he didn't necessarily write that speech.
Right, right. Or rehearse it for that matter.
Yeah, and so... I want to say to the people who are responsible for the Prime Minister's communications
mm-hmm.
and writing his speeches, helping him prepare for his speeches, whoever's responsible for public speaking coaching, there's something wrong.
Right.
That can't be our PM.
Right. And I don't want people to think that we're just railing on him for railing's sake. The PLP has an issue with this as well. Their speeches and conversations and public discourse it leaves a lot to be desired. We're not at the level that we need to be.
Yeah. And, you know, I could say, like, I was hurt. I was in my feelings. Let me mm-hmm. tell you why. First of all, it felt like Minnis had decided that the best way to engage my fellow Bahamians and residents is as if we were all in a third grade creative speaking class or something.
And
this time I was literally offended by it.
Yes.
Because, let me tell you why. Because we spend in far too much money for you to think that that was an appropriate strategy, sir.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to beg you to stop talking to us like children. And let me tell you why I said because a large percentage of your citizens that you were addressing, they tuned out last night. Mm-hmm. And when I called people to ask them how they felt about it, they asked me what's wrong with me and my expectations. And why do I continue to expect more from you from y'all? That's because it's a team. And here's what I'm saying to y'all. The PM can't do that if somebody cut the mic, you know.
Right.
The PM can't do that if somebody cut the lights, you know. The PM can't do that if BPL just, accident. Sorry, 10 minutes, you'll be back up.
I doubt we have the testicular fortitude to stand up in that.
No,
vehicle.
Somebody has it.
Well, I hope so.
Somebody has it.
I hope so.
I got to guess, so we're not going to linger long.
Yes.
But, you know, that point leads me to this other point. I haven't really talked about it in a long time, but dear Minister of Works, you still on the list to be fired. Right? And here's the next issue we adding to the list. In the recent past, you used the word masterful to describe the PM's and the government's performance under his leadership. The word you used was masterful. That's why I am petitioning for you to be fired.
Yeah.
Because let me tell you what could have happened. That could have been a 15-minute presentation with him indicating initially there will be no mandatory vaccinations.
Right.
And when we say it this time, we really intend to mean it.
Exactly.
Right? The next thing is you go through what the new restrictions are and the implications mm-hmm. for existing operations on those particular islands where the curfew has changed. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Then you give us a sense of when the election is so that people can, we could establish a reasonable timeline and protocol for registering. And even before you get to the election date,
right.
tell us about the upgrades to the public healthcare system. Like really, you could have led with that. But the actual things, this is a bunch of rhetoric. Most of which haven't been completed, and we know what that means, that there's no guarantee that they will right. ever be completed.
And it's scary that objectively, persons on his team can't say, are we doing the right thing? Are we asking the right questions? Are we going in the right direction?
Well, now, we don't know if they're not saying it. What we do know is they're not saying it publicly.
And yeah. that's what we need. We need that public advocacy to say, hey, you know what? We're on the same team, but I need to speak out and say that I'm not comfortable with where we're going.
Absolutely. Another thing that upset me greatly, right, is there are two instances when the Prime Minister mentioned Founding Fathers, like it's a mechanism he was using to create right. an environment in which the next thing he said,
yes.
you know, encourage you. And he referenced the first time the Founding Fathers, and the second time he referenced directly A.D. Hanna, who had just passed. And I'm going to iterate or echo something that other public media hosts have been saying over the last few days. I would say, sir, the audacity to use that man's name in your vaccine coercion program, but you haven't seen fit to make a declaration to have the national flags flown at half mast in honor
of
this founding
man.
Father. Yeah?
Hypocrisy, man.
I understand? And these are young people. I don't even know A.D. Hanna like that. Right? Mm. It was insulting. As a human rights advocate who is very concerned about constitutional affairs in this country, to hear that, sir, it was, to use a polite word, it was icky. Please stop. But here's what really concerned me. I gotta make it to our next segment. Mm-hmm. It's this sort of glib announcement that today you're going to table the bill to entrench portions of the COVID protocols in ordinary legislation. And that you're gonna table it for consultation, wide consultation. But here's what you didn't do. You didn't indicate what the timeline for consultation is.
Right.
You didn't indicate the process for consultation is. You didn't indicate who we should call if we want to access a copy of the bill so we could look at it. See, we're going to have to talk about this over and over mm-hmm. again mm-hmm. because these are real constitutional issues.
Yes, yes. There's significant cause for concern in that regard as well. For the mere fact that at its root, these emergency orders take away many basic civil liberties, the freedom of movement, obviously the freedom of speech, the freedom of self to well, wearing a mask isn't that bad. I'm not going to make that a big deal. But there are issues in the COVID-19 protocols that while they may protect some, they also restrict others.
Right. And a number of these temporary provisions
yes.
may not be discriminatory in nature,
right.
but they are discriminatory effect.
Right.
And we refuse to take that into account
right.
and to make changes to accommodate people.
And in the long term, it's detrimental to this country. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so for me, right, this is that is the most important point. This idea that you're just going to jump up, you didn't even talk about the legislation that you have to table to extend the emergency order. Like, I was hoping you would talk about that a bit more, but you didn't even talk about that. Were you jumping all the way? And while I know people are going to say, boy, Aaron, you may be making a lot of noise about nothing, I got to remind you all of a couple things. You remember Re-Earth, the Blackbeard's Key decision, Justice Winder's decision in 2009, and it's 2021, and in 2019, this government was about to host a site plan meeting for a site that the court said should not exist. And so when we realized that, right, we could talk about the gambling referendum that turned into an opinion poll, that turned into, well, a fiasco, because nobody wants to acknowledge that regularize and legalize have two separate meanings in the law.
Very different.
Right?
Because, for example, marijuana could be illegal but regularized.
Well, no. Marijuana is not illegal. It's decriminalized. It can you can possess it with authorization from the ministers responsible.
Right.
And it's the way, in the same way, cocaine is not illegal. Unauthorized possession is illegal. Otherwise, hospitals would not be able to hold and administer cocaine or codeine-derived drugs and medications.
Right.
We had that 1027 mark. I got another text here. Good morning, Aaron, and to your guests. How would not making vaccines mandatory assist persons who are employed in the private sector where employees are making it mandatory? Dear texter, let's start over again. Making vaccines mandatory is illegal. It is illegal.
Completely.
It is unacceptable. There is a system of governance that the whole world adheres to. And the rules and provisions on this particular issue are encoded in the Nuremberg Code, right?
Yes, yes.
Mandatory vaccinations are illegal. They are unacceptable. You're suggesting to me that I need to prove to you why they wouldn't work. Do you understand how far we have come, society?
Right. And I don't think anybody's saying that these vaccines don't work, you know, but that this is a choice, a personal choice within oneself to say, I'm going to take a vaccine. This is not something that you force on somebody.
Yeah,
we've seen this before.
As a human rights advocate, I am discussing the particular human rights issue that it does not matter the efficacy of the vaccine, that there is still a foundational principle upon which the whole world systems of governance are rooted, which say that you cannot force someone to put something in their body that they do not want. And so we're going to talk about, people are going to say, oh, well, when they was children, they take the vaccine and had no problem. When they were children, they did not have autonomy to make those legal decisions.
Exactly.
Right? So we could take that argument out of there. How would not making vaccines mandatory assist persons who are employed in the private sector where employees are making it mandatory? Employers are not allowed to make it mandatory.
Right.
That's why the Prime Minister couldn't say to employers, do what you want, even though the Director of Labor was doing what he wanted. And attending to the party's business as opposed to attending to the laborer's business. Dear texter, and to all of the people out there who are following this train of logic, and to all of the members of the judicial community that do not recognize or acknowledge that they have an ethical and a moral duty to provide resources to clear up these particular and specific issues around things like mandatory vaccinations. And that's why we continue to critique the Prime Minister. Because if you continue to allow him to get up and say things like, I am encouraging employers to urge employees to take the vaccine, if you continue to let him do that without being challenged, then you will be right where you want everybody else to be, with no rights, looking around for help, no one, because you made sure that no one could help you.
And it's amazing that there are so many public offices closing because of COVID-19 exposure and persons within those offices getting COVID. You're telling me that the government wants everyone to take vaccines and take all these precautions, take these measures. But within the public service, the police force, Royal Bombs Defense Force, within all these different places, there's no measures to ensure that those persons in those places are taken care of, regardless of the vaccine. Are we ensuring the masks are being worn? I went to road traffic just this morning. Crowded. Extremely crowded. Social distancing doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Everyone piles up together. Some persons have their mask under the nose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. Seriously, you're going to tell us to take a vaccine and you aren't even enforcing these things?
I got to make a push. But just as you say that, and we can close it out, right? And here you are now as a citizen in the office trying to follow the rules.
Right.
And are relying on the people that have either a statutory or a ethical or a moral duty of care to mm-hmm. the people within this space.
Mm-hmm.
To regulate the space, and they looking at you like, if you won't get this done, well, you must even stand on that line. It ain't my job to make this space safe for you. Right. Well, then what is your job? Anyway, see, I'm glad I have a guest today. This is what I was afraid is going to happen. We got to spread this conversation out over a few days, because this is important. These are important legal and human rights issues that cannot be left to dissipate. Thank you, producer. Let's get to this break. And when we get back, dear callers, if you could hold on, I would love it. Just hold on. Stay tuned to Guardian 96.9 FM, your station for the fresh news, smart talk all day. We'll be right back.
I've been representing all my life. I'm getting ready to make it count this time. Since 2021, for your family line, you better get ready. It's about that time. So tell mama to be ready. Tell it to the whole family. The rock the 242. The count depends on you. So tell Tita, go tell below. Mark it down on your calendar. Since 2021, this one's for everyone.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On the Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On the Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Okay, to my callers, I got to ask you to make it very, very quick. This was supposed to be a very brief segment because we couldn't have a show and not touch on what the PM said last night. So you're on the clock.
Erin Green, how are you?
I am good, thank you.
Wonderful. Good, good. I called to make a positive contribution to what you said this morning. It's people like you with the kind of minds that you all have that need to propel this country forward. Young people, not them old coach. You said that the flags were not flown half-mast for the highest statesman in this country, either Dion Hanna.
Mm-hmm.
And you were quite correct. You understand me? Them other fellas, they run the flag half-mast for the Haitian man the other day, and nothing to Dion. Second of all, I would like to thank you for using the word autonomy. A lot of them don't know what that word means.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you need to break it down for them. Because I called the show the other day and they tell me I'm crazy, saying the church has full autonomy. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we don't know about autonomy because we're not raised in autonomy. We're not raised to understand the concept. It becomes too troublesome when you realize that you have autonomy. But you cannot operate as an adult, a functioning adult, unless you understand the extent of your autonomy, your authority, in a space where others can exercise the same amount of authority. Anyway, caller, you are on the clock.
Hey, good day, Ms. Erin. What's up?
Everything is good. How you doing?
I am great. And good morning to the gentleman inside your studio.
Morning,
Ms. Green, I heard a gentleman said that, you know, I think he alluded to something just now about you. You know, in other words, you can be an activist. You can, but you know something, Ms. Green, let me tell you something. Persons like yourself, over the years, you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And persons like yourself who means good is getting mashed down. You hear what I say?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's be real. Mm-hmm. It didn't make no sense to pretending it. The PLP is marched some people like sometimes persons down when I say as far as activists because they don't like you to, to especially speaking out against a government.
They don't like you to disrupt.
You know, of course. So so you know when the gentlemen say they should need Miami persons like you have a platform and if people listen to you of your platform, why don't you use Aaron to spread the word about vaccination? Why don't you use Aaron's platform to get through to the people? Don't you think that Aaron has a better respond to getting through to the people than you as a government? But they ain't gonna do it, you know, Aaron. You know why they ain't gonna do it? Because guess what? Aaron don't be up and down with the red or the yellow or the green shades up and down making a bunch of noise when you don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
But let me say this to you, Ms. Green. I live in a country that in a 21/7, this is where I live in Nassau, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand what the gentleman, I even ain't saying no more Prime Minister, said, like, how could you, that Paradise Island has a 9 o'clock curfew? Where, Aaron and the gentleman in the studio, tell me who police could go over PEI and tell them, hey, y'all can't open the club up after nine.
Man, do it. Okay, go. You know that there will be an exemption applied to all hotels, resorts, and possibly Airbnb properties on Paradise Island.
It has already been stated that that's applied, actually.
Absolutely. Look here. Okay, so guys, I'm going to run through these texts quickly, and then we're going to switch gears to the next part of the show. Tech says, great show as usual. They try to make vaccinations mandatory in France and people cross their break that place right up for them doing that. Well, you know, France is the land that don't trouble me. Another text, hi, can you imagine me telling you that you have to be a Christian? That is how we know this medical apartheid is not of God. Oh, that's another point I was going to make. Dear Prime Minister, you cannot sell a national vaccination program in a pluralistic society with citizens of multiple faiths and talk about you praying to the Christian God for a solution to a national global pandemic?
It was Sunday service.
What type
of Sunday service?
Forget the Sunday service part. That's a bad strategy.
Yeah.
You're going to make the other gods upset. The other gods are just like Bahamians. It don't matter how good your plan is. If you are against them, then nobody is for you. Man, it's such a good strategy going, and then you went and did that. Sorry. Another text. Morning, can we stop calling it a vaccine? We got to call it whatever engages people so they could stay in the conversation. The worst thing is when people completely disconnect from the conversation. Like how we have a conversation about not running red lights and not turning right on red, but you all just disconnect from the conversation because you can't care. Another text. Hi, yeah, right, Aaron. How dare PM mention Honorable A.D. Hannah, great Bahamian icon and founding father. Wow, when slave mindset becomes a leader. Also, I want to say the Honorable A.D. Hannah did not accept the knighthood. He is not a sir. He did not want to be a sir. So stop calling him a sir. You could call him my lord. Mm-hmm. You call him that. You don't have to call him sir. Good morning, please, Mr. Prime Minister. And you have to do it with the accent, my lord, so you understand the cultural import. Yes. We're not talking about my Jesus Christ. Good morning, please, Mr. Prime Minister. If you're listening, how can you make a demand saying when the country is going to open up and you don't even know what's coming? You need to just pray and ask God to deliver out of this plague. God has the last say. And that's what he did.
He did pray.
That's what he did. Okay, thank you, texters. Arlington, is my guest still there? He has not forsaken me, right? Good morning, Mr. Christopher Davis.
Morning. I was enjoying that little segment right there. Good morning.
My sweet brother, Noomsi, you have not forsaken me.
Right here, man. Right here. Excited to share with everybody what I wouldn't say discovered. I would say what we rediscovered.
Before you start, I have some special audience members in Canada. And it's a Bahamian woman who is running her own homeschool camp. And this week's name is Junkanoo. And so they are tuned in and they're really interested in this International Junkanoo Festival Foundation. I just want to let you know that.
All right. Well, it's the World Junkanoo Festival Foundation. But I guess international is almost one and the same, right? And essentially, it's a foundation that we started to do a lot of outreach work. And we're also going to be focusing on edutainment events. And so the first one that we're planning is actually going to take place next year in March in Ghana from March 1st until March 10th. And it's going to coincide with the Ghanaian Independence Day celebrations. And the theme of that is Afro-Historical Renaissance, Junkanoo, the Unifying Force.
Absolutely. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, so you just come back from Ghana, right?
Yes, I did, just yesterday.
What you was doing in Ghana, and what did you learn about Junkanoo while you were there?
Man, I learned, well, you know, I was already working on my book, Sankofa Flamingo. That's also the name of my, you know, entity that I have going. And I have a chapter in there called The Spirit of Jankwau, right? I say it in the English way. They said Jankwau. That's how they kind of said. But that is actually the man that the British called Junkanoo, who the Dutch called January Connie, who the Germans called Jan Connie. Okay, and the man and the namesake of Junkanoo. And, of course, I went over there to do my research and to solidify a lot of the research that I was doing, as well as some of the planning for the upcoming festival next year. Actually function. And I was all over Ghana, but more in a town or a village called Porcasu, which is today known as Princess Town. Porcasu being the native or the indigenous African term for the village. And Princess Town is, of course, the neo-colonial name of the village, named after the Prussian princes and princesses of the area, who they erroneously referred to as allies to the man we know as Junkanoo, a.k.a. Jankwau. And I think we need to make a special effort to start calling them Junkanoo, because the name Junkanoo actually went in tandem with the British appropriation and paternalistic whitewashing of the entire Junkanoo story.
Ah, okay. Wow. So we need to reclaim its original name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gyan. Anyone who's watching, you know, soccer or familiar with Ghanaian names, Gyan. Gyan is a common name, and that was his, I guess what we would say in a Eurocentric term, his first name.
Mm-hmm.
And his last name was Kwau. In the Twi language, that W at the end gives you a very long oo sound. And so you could see kind of the etymology of the word and how we come to Junkanoo in the Bahamas, I should say. Right now, he was never a slave. Let me tell you who he was quickly, because I know we don't have a lot of time. He was never a slave, so we could throw that one, that story in the garbage.
Okay.
You know, and of course, we could already make that assumption because you have this commemoration of this man, Junkanoo, popping up simultaneously in Jamaica, Barbados, Suriname, Belize, and even in the eastern coast of the United States, right? Mm-hmm. Now, why is it that we celebrate in this man and we have so many African chiefs? It's because he was both, as described by the chief of Princess Town, by the elder council, by my brother, Alice Kwofi, who I consider one of the foremost experts on Jankwau. And these people were there living in the southwestern extremity of Ghana and pretty much did not have any idea that we were over here commemorating one of their former chiefs, okay? Mm-hmm. And when I was in Princess Town, I walked through Fort Cross Friedrichsburg. Jankwau was a very, very wealthy man, not because he was a slave trader. There's no evidence that he traded in any slaves. I wasn't able to find any empirical data in my research looking at the slave ships that left from that fort, especially while he had control of that fort from about 1715 until about 1724, okay? Now, one of the reasons he was so wealthy was typical of the region was because of the gold that he had, but also because he controlled the fresh water supply in that region. And amazingly, Sister Erin, that reservoir that he built in Fort Gros Friedrichsburg, the fort that he took away from the Dutch and held for several years, despite all of the British and Dutch aggressions, he held out for several years. That reservoir there was still functioning. So to visit this area, according to them, but I was also able to drink water from the very same water reservoir that Jankwau was controlling.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was absolutely amazing. We saw his house, his residency, and his palace. When he took the fort away from the Germans and the Dutch, he actually broke down their chapel and broke down the house of the colonial, I guess you could say, governor in the area at the time. And he used those bricks to build his own mansion, to build his own palace. And then he also built a wall that was at least about 50 feet high, going across the entirety of his village. And so it went from a lagoon to the ocean. And so you could not get to his village without his permission. And, you know, he was just an amazing man. He fought, and anybody, it was actually quite a diverse community made up of mostly Ahanta and Nzema people. But you also had many different refuge in his kingdom. And so he was a man that protected Africans against Dutch, German, and British enslavement, in a nutshell, a warrior. And he was never a slave in the Western Hemisphere. Those people that served under him, and even much later, all of his feats became legend. You know, we don't have time to get into all of them now, but one of my personal favorites. And you know, they always tell us, oh, well, you know, the British give us this day off on Christmas Day and all that is foolishness. John Quow's military strategy was to invade these European forts on Christmas Day, simply put, because he knew that's when he was able to catch them slipping, when he would catch them with their guards down, so to speak, right? And so in 1712, one of his most famous feats in battle was when he expelled the British from Fort Metal Cross, which is just a few miles east of Princeton. And he expelled the British from there, and he chose Christmas Day in 1712 to end up expelling them from that fort.
Boy, look here, the art of war is real and the strategies of war are real and persistent, because up to this day, we're doing the same thing. I know it's some people are going to say, particularly this audience, why this example, right? But in the LGBT community, there are advocates like in Cayman, they just had their first pride, and my good friend, colleague, Billy Bryan up there, you know, she demanded that, look, this can't be a party. We have to focus on the fight. And it's because it's not a celebration. And look how they convinced us that that day that was actually about us defeating our enemy, right? They have convinced us to convince ourselves that it was just a party.
Exactly. Yes. And so over time, it's important to realize when you see how the slave ships operated, you know, from the mid-1600s up until the early 1700s, you know, probably more than 80 or 90%. Of the enslaved people brought to the Dutch and British colonies were from this region in southern Ghana and western Ghana. And even though, of course, now we know that our DNA doesn't reflect that strong Akan presence, however, look at the base of Bahamian society, Surinamese society, Guyanese society, Barbadian society, Jamaican society, and even the American Eastern Coast society, the base of that African culture was actually Akan. Okay, and so even though many more would have come later, these Akan people would have been here for several decades, and that would have already set that kind of African base. Yes. And so as other Africans would have came, they would have actually met these commemorations of John Canute. These stories would have already been there, right? And it's very interesting that one of the other links, like you say, it's not a celebration. When you look at Jamaica, for example, the places where they celebrate John Canute are also the places where they have the Maroon Society, is Nani Town, that is now named after a former Jamaican governor, Trelawney, known as Trelawney Town. You know, and this is where John Canute was celebrated. When you look at Guyana and the Berbice uprising in the mid-1700s, even though this was decades after all of these feasts that John Quow had done, by this time, his legend had spread all throughout these Akan people, right? And these legends, even by people who are considered enemies of the Ashanti and enemies of the Nzima and enemies of the Ahanta, the Fante people, for example, even they brought praises. So you have a man named William Ansa, who was a Fante prince, who was actually enslaved in Barbados. And when he experienced what was actually happening, he witnessed it for himself and experienced it himself. He had a complete change of heart, and he pretty much was ignorant of what was actually happening to us who was being sent in the Western Hemisphere.
You broke up for a second there, Chris. Could you repeat that?
Did you get the part about William Ansa?
Yeah. Right after that. It was only 3 seconds ago.
Okay, so he was enslaved in Barbados in a nutshell, but he was actually just the son of the Fante paramount chief. Okay, so first of all, this shows you, see this John Quow story in its totality really goes against the narrative of Africans enslaving each other and all of these things, right? Really does go against the narrative. And with William Ansa, when he actually experienced what was happening in Barbados, and he was eventually, his father was actually able to buy his freedom. You know, so you have a prince that was enslaved by some British commoner. So it shows that existed in Africa. And even when he was on that ship leaving, you know, his father's like, hey, that's my son. He's like, I ain't care. So you have the king, a Fante king. And this was in the 1700s, so that by that time, the political control in West Africa was already shifting to the European side. Yeah. And this is why Jan Kwa was commemorated so heavily. Now, his fate is what we actually learned about as well. And that was the part that, you know, when I was in Princeton, I shared tears of joy and happiness. I shared tears of sadness and I shared tears of anger when I really realized the level of lies and appropriation that the British had imposed on us. And how we still suffer from this, you know. And what they did was they took this commemoration that was never even fully accepted, and they started to label any African festival or celebration with this term John Canoe, right? Mm-hmm. And what began as reenactments of battles between the British and the Dutch. And this is why you saw Africans dressing up like the British and the Dutch soldiers, that Jan Kwao actually reenactments of these battles that Jan Kwao had won. But of course, in their racist, paternalistic, colonial mindset, they look at anything that we do and they actually teach us. And you see this in contemporary Bahamian sources talking foolishness about how we was just mimicking the slave master, dressing up like doctors and dressing up. No, we was dressing up like them to reenact these battles that Jan Kwao had successfully carried out. And after he was finally defeated by the British, a common parallel when you look at the colonization and the conquering of our brothers and sisters throughout the African diaspora, you see an increase in European military technology. So the most famous example, of course, would be the Zulu people. And the Zulu had defeated the Boers and the British time and time and time again. Embarrassingly so from their perspective, because remember, these people in Southern Africa were supposed to be quote-unquote savages, quote-unquote primitives. Mm-hmm. It was only after they invented the machine gun that they were able to defeat these Zulu. And it was similar with Jan Kwao, only after they invented handheld explosive. So when they actually expelled Jan Kwao from Pokasu, they had to use an entirely new weapon to get rid of him, which mm-hmm. was dropping hand grenades into the fort. Now, he never died. He was never captured. He was actually taken away and rescued and taken to Kumasi, more specifically, a town called Kwadaso. Mm-hmm. Okay, and Kwadaso is a Twi term meaning calabash. And his gold coin, we actually saw a picture of his gold coin, and we got this from the resident chief, the Santahini. You know, I met with some very powerful fellas who were very impressed by some of the research we did, and also very thankful that us in the Bahamas was able to retain the festival. Mm-hmm. And they was taken aback when I showed them videos of Jan Kwao. Now, Jan Kwao settled in Kwadaso, which means calabash. And essentially, he was so wealthy that, you know, when people came for a loan or anything, he would use his calabash. And he would just scoop up all this gold and pretty much just give it to you, you know. So this man was almost like a real life, very, very wealthy.
Now, Chris.
When
I sent you on this mission to Ghana, I sent you with an important an important mission. It was to determine the correct spelling of the word boy.
Boy.
Did you find out any information?
Well, I can tell you this. I don't think that boy came from Ghana, because they have this thing, as a matter of fact, it's a beautiful thing. No one called me the N-word not one time.
Okay.
Not one time. And as a matter of fact, there was one incident where my brother Kwame, the guy who hosted us, shout out to him. And of course, shout out to Uncle Bob Panoto Edan, you know, the program's head of the festival and the foundation itself, you know, also known as the Showmaster of Africa. And it was so funny because they're actually quite sensitive on how they address each other. And one he addressed this a guy who'd been his friend for years, and he said, and he called him boy. And the guy pretty much stopped the conversation right there and said, hey, don't call me no boy now. Hey, that's mine, you know? So, and the Ghanaian people, they have an expression where they say that the land belongs to the woman and the men still walk like they own the land, right? So it was just completely beautiful. And they had them speaking Shui. Now, one word that I did discover, I don't know if you saw this, I posted it on my page, Sankofa Flamingo, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I found origin, or what I think to be the origin, have to be, of itch. So, you know, itch. To define it simply, is the Bahamian term that we use usually in unison to express any crucial moment of impact. So where there's a fight and someone gets slapped, where there's someone playing basketball and he gets hit.
Yeah.
Every word is devolved to another word that begins with a B that we will not. But the proper term is it, right? So we driving around now, and Aaron, Sister Aaron, boy, I don't know how you can fare in Ghana, because you see, they make us look like the most respectable drivers in the world.
Listen, who follow all. Chris, I was in Zambia, in Livingston Park, where there is one car every 7 miles. And you know these monkeys run straight in the front of our car and ask us if we wasn't going to stop. So it's everywhere.
Hey, man, the driving over there was crazy. And as a matter of fact, to make it to one of my shows on time, I had to hop on the back of a stranger's bike.
Uh-huh.
And even through traffic, and boy, I was scared. You know, I had to keep my machismo decorum and not put my arms around anything, but I had to pull on to the back. But boy, between me and you, I was scared,
mm-hmm.
you know? But anyway, back to this word itch that we use.
Yeah.
So we driving around, dropping one big pothole, and I hear a brother call me say, ish, ish, just like that, right? And I just hop in and I say, hold on now, what that word is y'all saying right there? He say, ish, he say, you know, it's actually not really a swear word, but it means like, oh, shucks, or oh, crap, yeah. It's an expression.
Like,
right? Ow. And he dropped his pothole, and I was like, man, you know, we have an expression, itch, in the Bahamas. And like, and I asked him the context how it's used. He's like, it's kind of used when you could anticipate that something is coming.
Yeah.
And then, like, so he was like anticipating us dropping in this pothole, and then as soon as we hit it, he's like, ish.
So porking right? Also have to come directly from our West African roots.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, all of them things, you know, and
yeah.
Of course, this is just the beginning. I'm going to be planning tours where Bahamians could come, other Bahamians could come along, and we can have this grand pilgrimage to Parkasoo, a.k.a. Princess Town, which is going to be the new black Mecca, because we have to understand that Junkanoo is not just a Bahamian thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the mistakes we made in several past years where we always kind of try to protect the holiness of our festival, even though, as you mentioned before, it's been severely watered down and turned into just a parade and a celebration that's meant for entertainment, when it was much, much, much deeper. And of course, you know, you have the Fancy Dress Festival over there in Winneba.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Fancy Dress Festival has the same origins in Southwest Ghana as our Junkanoo Festival. And it actually evolved for over 100 years independently of our Junkanoo Festival. And you could take 5 pictures of the Fancy Dress Festival in Winneba, and you could ask them to show you which one is Bahamian, and they'll point to all of them and tell you they're Bahamian, when in fact, none of them are. And
mm-hmm.
and on the superficial level, when you just look at the costumes, the way they beat the drums, they shake, be in Winneba, and the people in Winneba walking around shaking cowbells.
So tell me, that's what I was about to ask you, what are the most original instruments that you found in Ghana?
Well, in Winneba, wasn't really used as a musical instrument, but I just found it interesting that all of the merchants, they were there walking around with this cowbell and shaking the cowbell to bring attention to the wares and products that they were serving.
Ah, then, as a common part of life, as a part
right,
of common life.
Just, right, it was just normal. So it wasn't like they was playing no music or nothing. They was just, and mostly women run the market over there, women run the business place over there. And it's not dissimilar to how we do our ASU, because you know, you usually hear me do ASU draw. The woman is doing the ASU draw.
Mm-hmm.
Usually if a man do it, you know, it's get a little mess up somewhere down the line. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it was just so many things. You know, these fellas is bop like us and all.
Yeah, but I mean, they are us.
Exactly.
It's more than just cousins,
right?
Like, they are us. Now,
yeah.
I got some text to read here very quickly. I just want to point out, you know, this thing that you said, that you mentioned about how we've watered this thing down. And I want to say to older Bahamians, this experience from younger Bahamians, don't take away their opportunity to participate in the culture in a way that serves them. What we have done is, because it happened to me, my generation didn't get the chance to take part in the Junkanoo that my father's generation took part in, right? And while there was a lot of roughness and violence and gang activity on the outside of Junkanoo, that's because we changed the shape of Junkanoo without accommodating the inherent spirit of Junkanoo.
Yes.
Don't take away these opportunities for your children to have rebellion and have these spaces where they can be rebellious.
Right, exactly. And when you lose, and because we've lost the context of the parade, you know, like I said, this is something that we could be extremely proud of as Africans here in the Bahamas, you know. And many people, while I was there in Princeton, many of us were moved to tears, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to see the reception of the Parkasoo. And then when I explained to them how we commemorate Jan Kwao, you know, they was just amazed by it.
Mm-hmm.
When I showed the parade, I showed them the women dancing in the parade and all this stuff. You know, they was just completely amazed. And it began with me speaking to just a handful of people And by the time as I was 5 minutes in, almost all the adults within that village was there, listening to me speak about Jian Kuo and how we commemorate him. And then you had, it was so amazing. And you had all these people who all of them know different parts of the story, was just coming there. And I was explaining to them, well, yo, you guys, I said, I'm the historian, but you guys are the real experts on this. Jian Kuo.
And your lived experience of it. Chris, how can the audience get in contact with you?
Sankofa Flamingo on Facebook and Instagram, Sankofa Flamingo. And then you also have the World Junkanoo Festival Foundation on Instagram and Facebook. Give us a like. Both of those pages, we're on the road to our 1,000 special surprise for the people that make it to like one the 1,000. Yeah, I don't know if I explained it right, but
the person who is the 1,000th like gets a prize.
Right. So that don't mean you stay there on 998 and try stall and try time it.
No, you lose out.
This is something that we will all benefit from. I'm so proud to say that I think that I finally helped and contributed to bringing closure to who this man, John Canoe, was. And again, he was a hero, never a slave, fought against the British and the Dutch, had several resounding victories, was finally expelled from the region, settled just outside Kumasi, where he was granted by Oswe Tutu, an area known as Kwadaso, where he was still able to help, and he was still fighting against the British and the Dutch from these regions as well. So he's an amazing man, a warrior, a chief, a merchant, not a slave, and definitely not a slave trader. And it makes sense. Why would we, you know, it makes sense.
Why would we celebrate?
Right. And this is what we're celebrating. This is who we are celebrating. Absolutely. Jian Kuo from Pokasu. So again, you could add me on Sankofa Flamingo, Facebook and Instagram. And of course, the World Junkanoo Festival Foundation. Shout out there to Alex Kofi right there in Princesstown. Shout out to Chief Yaw Augustine, Chief of Princesstown. Shout out to Big Brother Vincent Kwame Boyachi. And shout out to Uncle Bob Pinoto with Dan. Shout out to my brother Sam, the dancer. I got too much people to shout out in Ghana.
Okay, shout out to our African family, because look, I got to read through these texts, eh?
Yes.
Thank you so much, Chris. Text about vaccinations. I want to get mandatory for armed forces to be vaccinated like the United States is doing. Another text, green. While children would not have autonomy to refuse vaccinations, their parents did, and they did what was required. I think that was the point I was making. Thank you, Texter. Hi, you're right, Aaron. How dare the PM mention the Honorable A.D. Hanna, great Bahamian icon and former founding father. Is our Bahamian flag now flying half-mast until his funeral service? Another text, scammers on WhatsApp using Red Cross to con you. Beware. Please beware. And if you are contacted by an international organization, they have a local branch, contact the local branch before you send anyone any money. Another text here. A free mind is a free society and not coerced into mass psychosis conformed via big tech censorship, fair propaganda using radios, phones, and TV. Another text here. While I need his contact, I want to go to Ghana. Sankofa Flamingo on Facebook or Instagram is how you can reach out to Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Wow, Chris. Thank you again. I have another text here that says, please give him a whole day to educate us. So you know what that means. You got to get back to us before the month of August is out so we could continue our emancipation discussions.
Well, if once you follow Sankofa Flamingo, like I said, we have a lot of stuff. And, you know, only because you, my sister Erin, and I appreciate you for always giving me a platform. But I let the cat out the bag here. We actually working on a Junkanoo documentary with the National Film and Television Institute of Ghana. It's going to include, of course, many of the Bahamian scholars. I ain't going to call their names now, but you know who I'm talking about, those that have already done research on Junkanoo and all of these things.
But Chris, I'm all out of time. I really got to go.
Sorry.
I got one last text that I need you to hear. Boy, spelled B-E-H-Y. B-E-H-Y came from our Moorish roots. Now, that would be an interesting show that's not talked about at all. So I'm going to need you to get to that research.
Tell them, message me on Facebook, because that's a good one. Because, you know, Bay from the Almoravid dynasty, B based in Senegal. And you know, Bey, B-E-Y-E, is a very, 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 very common name in Senegal and Mali. So wow. that's absolutely possible. Yeah.
Thank
it could
you.
Be a sign of affection, you know?
Absolutely. Thank you, Christopher Davis. Thank you to my producer today. And thank you to my audience for staying tuned to such a wonderful and rich conversation. I'm definitely going to have Mr. Davis on in the upcoming weeks. 9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. And Levan Miller and Unleash is up next.